This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening. And what are you worth out there, you American worker you? Huh? Does your wage come close to what you think you are worth? How much would we pay someone to work at, say, a drive-through fast food place? How much should we pay them?
Would you like to try our new beef and cheese pot pie on a stick? Just $1.99 for a limited time only?
Oh, Lester.
Honey, it's okay. I want you to be happy. Would you like smiley sauce with that?
Now, actor Kevin Spacey there surely got paid far more to do this scene from the film American Beauty than a real fast food worker would get in life. Is Spacey worth it? What does Spacey get for playing nasty Frank Underwood on House of Cards?
For those of us climbing to the top of the food chain, there can be no mercy.
In such professions, athletics, business, entertainment, the numbers are high and seem just pulled out of a hat somewhere, a hat with a lot of zeros. Is Jamie Dimon at JPMorgan Chase worth the $20 million he got paid in 2014? Or Tim Cook at Apple worth the $9.2 million he got paid? How about Elizabeth Warren, senator? But while at Harvard, she earned as much as $700,000. The Congress and many states are very focused on raising the minimum wage right now. New York has recommended pushing it to $15 an hour. Earlier this summer, Los Angeles passed a citywide minimum wage of $15 an hour, set to go into effect in 2020. Careful, wouldn't want to push it. Seattle, San Francisco, Oakland, Chicago, and Washington, D.C. are among the cities that have either already passed measures or have current proposals in place to raise their minimum wages. But how are these numbers decided? We will raise it enough, but not too much. Oops, that's too much. Small businesses are getting mad. Politicians don't like that. Let's trim it back, trim it back. Whoa. This very random approach to minimum wages does everything but consider if anyone could actually live off that wage. In fact, sometimes it seems we go out of our way to make sure it doesn't provide a living income.
Right now, work doesn't always pay. And we even pay others to make sure it doesn't pay by monitoring those on assistance.
Scott Santens is a writer and advocate for what's called universal basic income, different than a minimum wage. He's a moderator of the basic income community on Reddit.
If everyone were to start with $1,000 every month as a right of citizenship, that's enough money outside of work to cover our most basic living expenses. Now, consider how a wage negotiation would go with a basic income in existence. Suddenly, $7 an hour may no longer be enough. Why work for $7 an hour when you're already getting $1,000 every month as a new starting point, just for being alive? This right here is possibly the best reason to go with basic income instead of a hodgepodge of minimum wage laws, earned income tax credits, welfare programs, food stamps, tax deductions, and all the rest. Because basic income provides an income floor, there's no longer any reason to keep any of these bureaucracy-filled ways of easing but never-ending poverty.
Ending poverty. Is that the goal? Can the minimum wage do it? Or is it something much bigger? To speak more about how the minimum wage may be beside the point, and in fact how it might actually be helping to keep poor people at the bottom of the economic ladder, here's Tim Hartford, a columnist for the Financial Times and author of The Undercover Economist Strikes Back, How to Run or Ruin an Economy. Tim, welcome to The Takeaway.
Thank you very much, Tom.
So minimum wage, is it beside the point? Is it meaningful in any way, or how do you see this?
I think it is meaningful. The recent moves, I think, are risky. It's worth going back about 20 years. So economists used to think it was clearly ridiculous to have a minimum wage because the market would pay you what you were worth economically speaking. You may be worth a lot more as a person, but they would pay you the value of your labor. And if the minimum wage was below that, it would make no difference. And if the minimum wage was above that, well, it would just cause unemployment because employers wouldn't want to pay that. And so people would lose their jobs. So the minimum wage would either be irrelevant or actively harmful. And then what happened was a series of minimum wage laws were introduced in the UK and various US states. Economists looked at their effects and they concluded, actually, it seems to be doing some good. It is genuinely raising people's wages at the bottom, and it doesn't seem to be destroying jobs, or maybe not many jobs. So that was the point at which economists started sort of thinking harder about why this thing works in practice but doesn't work in theory. I should say, all of the experiments so far with the minimum wage have been quite a lot lower than the $15 an hour that we've been talking about more recently. So just because the minimum wage has been a success so far doesn't mean You can make it $15, you can make it $20, you can make it $50, and you still won't destroy jobs. I guess we'll find out.
Isn't the minimum wage discussion an outmoded debate left over from the point in the industrial economy in the 1960s when and 50s and 40, you know, most of the 20th century, when a factory wage would pay a living wage and that everyone could buy a house and support a family, the sort of post-World War II economic boom. And that doesn't exist anymore. And we're talking about minimum wages in really an abstraction.
I think you're right, John. I think this is going to sound strange. Whether you are in favor of a minimum wage or not depends on how much you think the future is going to be like Star Trek. So bear with me. So in Star Trek, the robots do all the work, right? So nobody, apart from a few intrepid space explorers, nobody has any economic value to their labor. There's no point in going out and working hard because the robots can do your job better than you can. And in that kind of world, there's absolutely no point in trying to set a minimum wage and say, well, you have to pay people a certain amount an hour because no one's working anyway. A more appropriate policy for that sort of world is where the government just taxes the robots, taxes the output of the robots, and hands out cash to everybody. So a lot of this depends on whether we have confidence that there are lots and lots of good jobs still out there, and all we need to do is to put our thumb on the scale and force employers to be a bit fairer in their negotiations. And I think we really don't know what the answer is. What concerns me is that the minimum wage is a very easy sell politically, because people don't think too much about the risk that it will destroy jobs, and people think, well, employers are going to have to pay it, so it won't come out of my pocket. And when you look at alternative proposals, for example, a universal basic income or a negative income tax, that sounds much more like, you know, paying people for, you know, sitting around smoking dope. It sounds much more like it's going to cost a lot of money for the taxpayer, even though I think a lot of economists would say, well, there's a lot of logic to that kind of approach.
Well, the 21st century, as you've suggested, and Star Trek notwithstanding, may be about this question of work being provided by a source of robots, technology, you know, various kinds of solutions that may or may not involve workers. But there are going to be a surplus number of people on the planet, and that, in a sense, economies have to decide how are we going to allow people to live, and that jobs aren't simply the answer for that. That you basically have to come up with some sort of income idea so that people can live, knowing that there are an enormous number of jobs that are not going to be performed by humans in the 21st century. And we really haven't gotten around to thinking of economies in that way, as ways of designing ways for people to live as opposed to paying for people's labor.
I think that's right. I mean, I should say the robots haven't taken all our jobs yet. There are still lots of jobs around, people still working very hard. But it is a possibility. Historically, it's always been the case that if you have been willing to work hard, and as long as you haven't had a severe disability, you would always be possible to go out and make a living. That's especially true since the Second World War. I know, you know, there used to be very widespread poverty before the war. The policy has always been focused on, you know, making sure people are trained to take jobs, people are encouraged to take jobs, you know, employers are encouraged to create jobs. That's always been the focus. You know, people should go out and work. And we haven't got our heads around the possibility, which is still a distant possibility, but it's definitely out there. We haven't got our heads around the possibility that maybe in some future economy, there will be lots of people whose labor has no real economic value. They have value as citizens, they have value as human beings, as voters, but they don't really have any value as workers. And it's kind of pointless to force them to work when in fact we should just be getting a machine, a software algorithm, a robot driver to do their job for them. We have not got our heads around this possibility.
And in fact, the ability of them to live quality lives actually does improve the culture and the quality of our communities in some way, rather than having them struggle in poverty. Before we go, and that's something to think about for the rest of the day, do you think the calculation of minimum wages in places around the world is done any less randomly or in a more sophisticated way for the CEOs who make $20 million, $9 million, $30 million?
Well, the evidence that we have on that, I think, is that is dependent hugely on what they can get away with. It depends, for example, on whether you have very dispersed shareholders who can't really keep an eye on what the CEO is making, or whether you have maybe a large concentrated family ownership structure who can keep an eye on what the chief executive is paid and make sure it's not too much. There's an awful lot of trying to conceal pay packages in share options, in golden handcuffs, golden parachutes, pension options. So I don't have a great deal of confidence that that system is particularly rational.
So we've gotten away from really gauging the value of work at both ends of the scale.
Maybe it was always an illusion to think that we could ever determine exactly what someone's labor was worth, economically speaking. It looks great in the textbooks, makes for good economic models. Perhaps it was always a little bit optimistic to think that that was going to be possible.
Well, that's something to think about and talk about for the rest of the day. Tim Harford is a columnist for the Financial Times and author of The Undercover Economist Strikes Back, How to Run or Ruin an Economy. Tim, thanks so much.
Thank you, John.
Minimum wage! Yeah!
This is Kelly from Omaha, Nebraska. America absolutely needs a living wage. My family does not need much to get by, but the new American dream is the freedom from financial insecurity. I may never be able to buy a home, but I want to live debt-free, have a solid savings plan, have the ability to keep my children and help them through college and retire.
Now that sounds reasonable. What do you think about this? Does America need a living wage? How much do you and your family need to get by?
Hi, this is Denise, and I'm calling from San Diego. In our part of Southern California, our household income of $100,000 puts us in the middle of the middle class. It's enough to get by with two adult children at home and in college, but just barely. We do without a lot of things we used to be able to afford, like dental work and eating out. I don't know what the minimum wage would have to be considered a living wage, but no person working full-time should need public assistance to survive.
Orlando, Florida. I don't necessarily support a living wage as it's being applied to the fast food industry. As a small business owner, I know how hard it has been to keep the two employees I have through the downturn, and now that things are slowly improving and I'm underwater, I still can't afford to give them what they identify as a living wage. And if the economy slips again, that would nearly double my staffing costs and would crush the business.
This is Catherine in Dallas, Texas. Only if it is dictated by each individual state, taking into consideration the cost of living in different parts of the U.S., but that's a slippery slope, as it would require each state to decide what is an actual need versus want. What some may only want is what other people decide they actually need. Pay TV, high-speed internet, Starbucks, mani-pedi. Is that a need or a want?
Hi, it's Terry from Portland, Oregon. Yes, I believe we should have a living wage, but I believe it should be tied to the prosperity and related cost of living of each city or demographic area, however that wants to be calculated.
Our economists out there calling 877-8-MY-TAKE to assess what is a living wage and how much do we need it. You can also comment at thetakeaway.org.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here? And maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.